people out.
Oh, I'm the wedding bouncer?
Yeah. You're the wedding bouncer? So yeah, I get to be the reverend.
The anti-wedding crasher.
You know, he's so ordained, too.
I'm going to end up with two people.
Like, we're both ordained. You're the
I'm going to end up with two
yet
people
again in the minority.
That are going to marry me.
The Church of the Black Mass.
The two of you.
So I'll run one ceremony, you bounce. You run one ceremony, I'll bounce.
Right.
This works well. We could be like his and hers. We could just, yeah.
Well, I think this is his and his and his at this point in time, because yeah, just the three of us here.
My big fat gay wedding. Well, <yeah. laughs>
it might be the only one that's ever worked for you.
Shit, we got to get you ordained.
I just can't visual.
Why?
Well, because so you won't be a minority.
I'm okay being a minority. Okay?
I just can't.
A lot of people in this world are not.
Strangely, I'm
rightly
okay with
so.
That.
Rightly so, not okay with it. But either way,
I'm okay being on the back of the bus.
Where are the buses? They were out before you set this shit up. Thank you. Bring the buses. Dude, seriously? On the table.
I don't know. You know, it's like you're talking
to. Run. Run.
You're just like sitting there having.
Fetch, bitch.
To yak with a bunch of people you don't know forever and just.
It is hard.
It gets difficult.
It is. But that's what the required social gathering thing, like weddings and funerals and. God forbid.
I know, but
baby
the thing
showers.
That is like you go and approach another person and they're like, I don't know this. Oh, shit. Now I'm going to have to do this maintaining the conversation thing. And I feel like just saying to them, like, hey, how are you? I'll maintain the conversation. And just saying that so they don't have that look of horror as I like.
I'm like, what are we
going to
do? We're going to talk as long as I got a subject with you, and
yeah,
then I'm going to gracefully move on.
Moving on
to the next group of people.
Moving
you know
on.
What I really hate worse than that though is the people that do the engagement party, the wedding,
the
after party,
thing.
Then the baby, and they just like there's nine parties in a
like
fucking row.
It.
Yeah, and you got to do that same. Don't worry, I'll maintain conversation with you. Shit, 95 fucking times in a row, and if you don't show up, you're a dick.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like
not that any of us obviously mind being.
I
a
eliminated
dick.
Any possibility of that for some of us. The person, I don't know. I did a few too many of those. I'll maintain the conversation, you know, approaching the person blind. Hey, how are you? I'm Rupert, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, you know, I don't know. At some point.
Do you like buck sex? Do you like
butt sex?
Yeah.
Exactly.
No,
ask them out.
It was just towards the end of the whole thing. And
here
then I realized, like, this person was effectively saying, like, you're so mean. And the entire room had quieted down. And so everybody heard.
Go figure.
Everybody heard her say this. And I was like.
Yeah, it's like the record scratch.
Yeah.
Rupert, you're so mean.
And I was, at that point, I was just like, I'm the nicest one in my family, and I make torture equipment. And I was like, guess we're done. And then I came down here.
And curtain.
Yeah. That was exit stage right.
Went up.
Yeah.
You know what I've found using frequently in those kind of weird situations right now is factoids from these topics that we do, because it's super middle ground. Nobody gives a shit, and it's like, oh, no way, you're kidding me. And so,
okay, you know what? There's only a few people that actually give a shit about us.
Well,
there's a couple of people in the South, and then there's another person that should remain nameless.
No, there's a handful of people. I'll get there.
Yeah, well, I went there.
Let's move on to the actual
bring it back.
All right, the actual stuff.
Thank you. Fuck. God.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are ruined heroes.
Yes, we are.
I remember to say that first this week.
We are very rude.
We are a weekly self-produced podcast that is free to anyone not giving us money, wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a man who owns a naval minesweeper. John?
I kind of find where Google is, and then sometimes I punch keys.
And Rupert?
I'm here. That's all I got this week.
That's not bad. I do appreciate that. It was a lot of scheduling.
And you've got a beer. You're here and you have a beer.
Yeah, it was a lot of scheduling to get us all here.
Pretty much on time, too. I'm sorry.
You were. Which, amazingly, coming from the distance that you did.
Yes, so.
Thank you. That's pretty good for you. So, you can find us as Ruined Heroes anywhere you normally get your podcasts, obviously, as well as at our website, ruinedheroes.com, where you can download that stuff for free if you want to download it, whatever. To interact with us, we are RuinHeroesPod@gmail, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. So basically all the social network shit is RuinHeroesPod. Lastly, if you'd like to make this a not-free podcast for you, you can find us at patreon.com/RuinHeroes or through the link on our site and start getting extra recordings and other rewards for just $1 a month. Just $1. Like...
Just $1?
Just $1 a month. You get the
just extra $1. Sets. $1 a month.
Well, at $2 a month, you get a name shout-out, and somebody
and
gave
no
it that.
And no John Tesh CD.
Yeah, and no John Tesh. Although, Wyndham Hill.
you know, I've got a
we
name
did
watch.
Have somebody give us money at the $2 level. We asked them what name they wanted to use. They said they'd prefer to be anonymous. So thank you, anonymous person, and we'll be sending you a Wyndham Hill CD.
I was
we
also...
We know where you live.
I was looking through some of my old CDs. And I have Papa Roach. I have a couple others.
Ooh, Papa Roach. There's yeah. a there's
like
a good
really
fucking
old.
Pink elephant gift.
Yeah. Yeah. So, just
anyhow.
Saying, you could be the proud winner of
a free
Papa
CD.
Roach CD.
Inside of a Wyndham Hill case. so.
God, it's late.
It is late.
It's late. We're doing this show, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing this show approximately 5 hours later than we normally do it.
And, well, yep. But I figured, I looked at it, and I figured we've done 10 in the morning. We could do 8 at night, right?
Yeah, but everybody that listens to us is already asleep.
They're going to be looking to it on Monday anyway. That's the way it happens. I think. I don't know. That's what the metrics say.
Okay.
Monday we get a spike.
You honestly understand the metrics?
Some of it's coming together. Like, people that do the podcast...
Dude, if you
shit,
tell me you understand
have,
the metrics,
I do not understand
you.
The metrics. The people that are doing
the
metrics are
I'll
understanding
kick you in the
that we
dick
need
if
to
you
understand
say you
them
understand
better.
That.
The people that are doing the metrics are saying that we need to understand them better. And so they're doing a better job at conveying the metrics. So it's still kind of goofy
okay.
information.
Did you hear what you just said?
Yes.
We're getting short bussed by the metric people.
The metrics are difficult in podcasting. It's a thing.
We're getting short bussed by people that make
less
the short bus.
Less you pay, and frankly, we pay enough for shit. I'm not adding another $100 bill onto us a year. For $100 a month, we could get better metrics, or $100 a year, we could get better metrics, but I don't fucking care. I do this anyway.
We do this for fun. Yeah. It's fucking free!
I do this
it's
anyway.
It's free! It's free! Hello, all right, free!
So, how about the topic? I got a intro. This is from a spoken word album.
Oh, God. That Henry was, Rollins?
Nope. That was released by this week's topic.
Jim Morrison.
The album is called America, Why I Love Her.
Oh.
You ask me why I love her? What? Well, give me time. I'll explain. You have a have you seen a Kansas sunset or an Arizona rain? Have you drifted on a bayou down Louisiana way? Have you watched a cold fog drifting over the San Francisco Bay?
Jesus, this sounds like some
this is a Grammy. This is a Grammy Award-winning album.
Do not try to sing anymore.
It just—it sounds like we're going into like Glen Campbell bullshit
okay,
or something.
If I remember the quote correctly, it's from a rather famous movie.
Where's your computer?
He did for him. I did for you. If you want to die, if you want to die right. Talk to me now.
Where's your computer, John?
We
need that shit.
It's over there.
Are we doing like that guy, the...
Get
the,
it. We need
the
it.
Minister guy?
Nope.
Oh, no.
His given
not
middle...
Billy Graham.
His middle name when he was born was Robert, which was then taken from him and given to his brother. They replaced the middle name with the name Mitchell, making his initials M-M-M.
Drawing a blank.
Oh, boy.
It's late.
It is. Born Marion Robert Morrison.
John Wayne?
Yes. Yes, we finally got there. Yes.
Sometimes a man's got to do what a man's got to do. All right.
So, yes. Born Marion Robert Morrison in 1907, Iowa, to parents Clyde Leonard... They called him Doc Morrison, a pharmacist, and Molly, or Mary, they called her Molly Brown, a telephone operator. His name was changed to Marion Mitchell Morrison after his original middle name was given to his new brother. I did make a note. What the fuck? Like, wasn't that mine?
John Wayne had a Grammy album?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Grammy award-winning album. Wow. It was a spoken word album called America, Why I Love Her. And actually, the title poem from which that first stanza that I read...
America, Why I Love Her.
Is
Uncle Sam. And I can't think believe, about that one just for a second.
I
can't believe
you didn't say I was close when I said Glenn Campbell. Well, they co-starred in one of Wayne's most famous movies.
Which one do you think?
I don't think I know.
Go ahead. Just which one?
True Grit.
Glenn Campbell's in True Grit?
Yes, he was.
Your friend did for you. And I... Well, no, your friend...
Oh, quit trying to misquote it. Look it up or something. Let it That's die. Why you need your computer.
Yeah. John Wayne and Glenn Campbell got top billing. Bruce Dern actually gets pretty low billing.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, I think it was one of his first movies.
So, he was 6'4" tall and has 179 credits on IMDb, 169 of which are acting at least. Many of them were multiple parts of productions, i.e. director, producer, and actor, or that kind of stuff. In 1914, the family moved to California, and this is where he started getting called Duke. His site says that his website, actually, by the way, his website, incredible biography. It's really, it was the best source out there. Everything I found, I got better information directly from his own site. Even the, like, he fucked up here and there stuff was on that. Like, they mentioned the 1971 Playboy interview, which we'll get to. Anyway, he had a dog named Duke. It was an Airedale. This was the Facebook hint, also the first Twitter hint. And the Airedale was named Duke. And the
Airedale.
Duke would, Airedale. Okay, anyhow, they're kind of a tall, they look like a really long, lanky Scottish Terrier.
With poodle blonde ginger hair.
Yeah. They're really an interesting looking
supposedly
critter.
Supposedly a fairly smart dog, I think.
Yes, yeah. Actually.
Nice
and,
dog.
And highly like trainable.
Them. Yeah.
And I've met one or two, but only briefly, and they've been decent to me. Have you known any?
You
like,
know what?
Yeah, they're a very popular dog
you
in
don't
the 70s
like intelligent
and 60s.
Dogs unless they're... You don't like them. You don't. You've met a bunch of intelligent dogs. You like dogs that
ironically,
walk
I do,
up to you
I
and
do
just...
relatively well with poodles, but I like bully breeds who are kind of just, you know...
You want them to be stupid.
They got the brain of a brick, and I like them that way. So
well,
anyway.
I think Airedales got really popularized by the Thin Man series of movies.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, because it was a husband and wife, and they had the Airedale, and it was given credit... First thing in the movie, starring Boom and I think
and this Airedale dog,
Asta as whatever.
All right. So anyhow, the dog's name was Duke, and Duke would chase fire trucks. And Duke and the guy who we will later know as John Wayne, currently called Marion, would chase around together all day. And so Duke would chase a fire truck, and John Wayne would chase his dog down and catch him. And so the fire guys started calling him Little Duke. The dog was Big Duke, and he was Little Duke.
Hmm.
But that's where the Duke thing came from, and that's kind of what he considered to be his name for the rest of his life. Ironically. Ironically. There's that fucking word. Sorry, ironically-ing. I'll stop ironically-ing. He did really well in school, both academically and athletically, and even was like a student body president, shit like that. Eventually, he got a football scholarship to USC. While there, he suffered a body surfing accident that fucked up his shoulder and squelched his football dreams and got him looking for work at local movie studios. The Fox Corporation hired him as part of his swing gang, which is basically gaffers and gophers. And then he was recognized by a couple of actors and started getting bit parts. We are about 1926 now. Dramatic page turn. It's evening. We get to do this differently, right?
Yeah. Ruined Heroes on the Nightbird wing.
Not your morning listening.
Yeah. No, just sort of like a...
Smooth jazz.
Smooth, cool jazz here on a sultry September evening.
Talking about John Wayne, our topic for the evening.
Talking about John Wayne. While we're thinking, we went from like Midnight Blue to NPR.
All right. So back to Ruined Heroes. The first decent role that he got was as a goose herder in the 1928 movie Mother Machree. M-A-C-H-R-E-E. Machree. It's got to be. I didn't watch it. I didn't watch any of these movies. I watched some of these movies when I was in college in film class. My film teacher was a huge John Ford fan, so we watched The Searchers and like
Big Valley.
Five other of those fucking Monument Valley movies. Monument Valley, a Twitter hint this week. I didn't watch any of that shit again. I just read stuff.
Really? Well,
yeah, I'm too young, I think.
Yeah, I mean, John Ford, like...
I could watch The Cowboys again.
Stop. What John Ford did in his movies was a little bit less great directing and a little bit more like it was sort of the first time people saw big vista shots.
Well, he built the Spaghetti Western.
Spaghetti Western was built on
John Ford movies. A big vista and put in music and then a small shooting scene and a face-off. It was the whole...
I guess maybe in that sense, but...
He didn't make Spaghetti Westerns, really, but he built them. Really.
No, he built Westerns. He did Westerns.
He very much did.
But if you think about seeing a John Ford movie contemporaneously, they're black and white, basically. But all of a sudden, you're seeing this big vista, this big panoramic shot, you know, that was very sort of Ansel Adams-like or something like that.
He was huge in the location for that reason.
Right,
he wanted, big rock, big red valley, that kind of thing in the camera.
You'd see Monument Valley, you'd see these mesas, and most of the country had never really traveled to these places or seen these places. All of a sudden, you're seeing it writ large on the screen in quite a dramatic fashion. And if you look at a lot of his shots where it's a group of cowboys on the plane, and you see the mesas, and it's very Ansel Adams in a way.
Well, it's the 20s and 30s that you started shooting these movies.
Right.
It was still literally...
So think about what you're
seeing.
Nevada
and shit was still the fucking Wild West.
Yeah, think about what you're seeing up until that point on the screen. So that's
and
why
then he throws
so...
this giant character, John Wayne, in the middle of this awesome spectacle of scenery with these...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. How would you define how he... I mean, he said things in a way that people really identified with.
They're very manly.
The way he said things,
they were obviously, clearly manly with very little words. He didn't have to do.
Well, and he was often on screen blamed as being a racist, but at the same time, all three of his wives were Latino based.
Yeah,
all three Hispanic, Latino, whatever definition they used at the time for each one of them. But all three of them, he, all right.
But the influence of those movies can't really be underestimated because, if you think about it, those movies were so influential that they got the French and the Italians obsessed with the American West.
American way, yeah.
Well, no, with the American West, with the whole cowboy thing and everything. French and Italian people tended to be, after those movies came out and things had puttered along and we get into the 50s and stuff, French and Italians are crazy for cowboy shit.
Right.
They're nuts. And then, then they start, making their own movies, starting kind of in the 60s. They start doing that stuff. And so, there's very few genres where you can say that, it got, an international thing where people were imitative of a film
genre.
Well,
right up until Bollywood, which now is imitative of all genres. They just take every movie in Bollywood.
Well, no, I don't know. Bollywood took... the classic musical and morphed it into situational inappropriateness and then combined with Madonna video dance moves. Because for everybody...
Early Madonna video dance moves at that.
Yeah.
Not the cool Bob Fosse kind of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, I mean, that's what Bollywood movies do. But you know, I don't know how I'm saying. There's probably two people on the planet who don't know it. But I think in the next year, it sounds like a joke, but I'm serious. But in the next year, there is the Bollywood version of Rambo coming up.
You've said this before.
Yeah, which I think we need to watch this together
and perhaps even record it.
I think we need to watch it together in loincloths. but the situational inappropriateness of a musical is a huge aspect of the Bollywood thing, but I don't know, maybe that comes from West Side Story.
When you're a jet all your days.
Yeah, let's make a movie about gangs who fight it out through dance and song. Right. That's the gayest thing in the world. What the hell is that?
But I mean, it's totally the 80s and the breakdancing thing.
What's that story? Early 60s. And that was, not the 80s.
You know, that's one of the things I loved about breakdancing. This has so nothing to do with what we're talking about, but that's fine because John's still absent.
Let's get back to John Wayne was not in West Side Story, is that
nor right? Did he breakdance.
Yeah, no breakdancing from John Wayne. Actually, being a fellow tall person, breakdancing never works for tall people if you look at it. If you're a tall person, you can't mix cement and you can't breakdance. Those are two things that you're very hindered by.
To segue, early in his career, he was often cast as a singing cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Story goes that he told the studios to find a cowboy who could actually sing, i.e. not him, and this is how they found Gene Autry, the actual singing cowboy.
Is that right?
That's the rumor.
Because it seems to me...
That's the internet rumor. It's the internet. I see it more than two or three places, and I put it down here. If I only see it one place, I throw it down as like, this is really dodgy, but this one, like, I saw three places.
It seems to me with... If you
put, I didn't read the wiki on it.
If you put a gun to John Wayne's head and said, okay, Miriam, you freaking sing this song, with the way John Wayne talks and the way he acts, and if he started singing, you would get Johnny Cash coming out.
You would hope, but that's not what you get.
Now, with some coaching, it seems like he could get a little Johnny Cash action going.
All right, so, but in one of my favorite movies of all time, Paint Your Wagon, Clint Eastwood sings.
Yes, that's true. Yes, unfortunately.
And people don't expect that. It's the same kind of thing. Like, this big, manly, macho character sings this softening song, and it doesn't come out like you'd expect it to, but it is one of my favorite movies of all time. Actually, my sister's middle name comes from one of the songs that he sings in that
movie. Let's face it, Shatner and Nimoy also had their musical albums.
They both, yes. So. And, I mean, come on, who can deny the Hoff? Not the Germans.
Back to John Wayne. Let's get back on topic here. Let's be serious. Here on Ruined Heroes, on the Nightwing.
Let's,
No. Keep going. Keep going. Why? Come on. Right. We can't. We're going to be here until 10 at night.
You're right. Okay, so, where was I? Okay, right, so his first season role, 1928, 1930s, Big Trail was when he was given the name John Wayne. Up until then, he went as Marion or Duke frequently.
What do you mean, in the credits it says Duke?
Yeah, in the credits it was...
Didn't know that.
Yeah, in the credits it was Duke Morrison.
Ah, wow.
Up until the Big Trail in 1930. And that's when it started showing up as John Wayne. And then it was the producers that said, like, dude, you can't have this name. Like, we got to have something more socially digestible. It's more fun and more interactive. And anyhow. 1939, Ford gave him his breakout lead in Stagecoach. Do you like this movie? Do you know this movie at all?
I can't say I really know it. I know the John Ford movies, you know, generically. But I haven't seen one in 20 years, so I couldn't tell you.
Stagecoach was the first one to be filmed in Monument Valley.
Yeah.
Which is the quintessential, as we got off on a tangent earlier.
Did John Ford do My Darling Clementine?
Fuck, I don't know. I wish John's stuff wasn't happening back here, but either way.
He didn't do High Noon.
No, he didn't do High Noon.
I think John Ford might have done My Darling Clementine, but I'm just totally going off my top, you know.
Yeah, top of your memory.
Yeah, and I really
Which,
don't.
You know, it turns Low out is frequently correct.
Low
so
confidence
level. I'm going to run with you on that one. During World War II, he tried to enlist, but was not allowed to because of his age and a few back injuries and shit from doing his own stunts in movies, which he had done up until this time, which was very unique then. Much of his own stunts.
Okay.
One of his best buddies was a stuntman whose name is in here somewhere.
Lee Majors?
Nope.
Fall Guy?
No. He had a really cool-ass name, too.
Doesn't matter. Keep going.
Well, no, I want to see if I can find it. That was a great really name. Yakima Canutt.
Yakima Hakima? What?
Yakima Canutt was the name Yakima of his Canutt. Buddy.
Sounds like a ski rack.
In the closing scene of the Searchers, he is accredited, along with friend stuntman Yakima Canutt, as pioneering the pass blow or the pass your face style of screen fighting, which can still be seen today. Up until then,
where
it was like
punch
stop.
And the guy turns his face at the same
time.
Well,
where you throw your fist past the front of their face and they turn their head at the same time and a noise is put in.
Yeah.
And it makes it look more realistic because your fist continues to move through it. Up until then, it was like stop the punch. Psh! Pow! Bang!
Yeah.
Like Batman. It was terrible. And they pioneered that.
Yeah. Well, you had to have that for the Quiet Man. I'm not going to hit you.
I like the
I'm
quiet,
not going to hit
you.
Hell, I'm not. I mean, it's the most famous scene in the movie.
So now we're back to college film classes. Yeah, the Quiet Man, I really did like that movie. He didn't hit anybody till the very end.
Yeah.
And
but it's the most famous scene.
Yeah, it's amazing. But it's very much not the average John Wayne movie, and that may be why I like that one.
John Wayne had a bunch of not your average John Wayne movies, because he had the Quiet Man, where he's like this Irish guy.
Okay, right.
Then he had McClintock, which is like, what the fuck? He's like, was that in San Francisco? He's like a private detective or a cop in San Francisco? What the hell was that? what was that? And he's running around in this houndstooth.
Didn't write it down.
He's running around in a houndstooth sports jacket the whole time. And he's like this cop. And it.
What
San
year is
Francisco
this? Like 78?
The McClintock stuff? I think there were more than one.
It had to be 60s because he.
I think it was 60s.
It couldn't have been 78 because his last movie was 76.
They were in color. Let's put it this way. So, yeah. Oh, his last movie was 76.
Yeah, his last movie.
Okay. 76. So yeah, I would say that they're 60s then.
Okay.
Because of the houndstooth sports coat everywhere and everything, and he's like a cop, and it was just like, what the fuck, you know? It was weird. Yeah.
So, during all this time that he was doing all, you know, he actually, in 1947, even opened as a producer and for Angel in The Bad Man and started his own company of productions. Then, during that time, he was growing a family. Like I said, he had three wives.
Growing a family?
Yep, he was growing a family. He had three wives.
Was she a pet?
He had four wives with this, or four kids with his first wife. And three more with his third wife.
Wow, knock him out.
So seven kids in total.
Damn, the dude had some swimmers.
Yeah. and none with the second wife, because the second wife was like a 2-year short marriage. Like,
yeah,
probably got married, didn't work out, got separated, got divorced as soon as it was reasonable, you know, kind of situation is what it looked like. But they were all of, as I mentioned before, Latin descent or Hispanic descent. Which was interesting for somebody that people call a racist all the time. But January 1950, he placed his footprints at the notorious Sid Grumman's Chinese Theater.
Grauman's Chinese
Theater.
Grauman's Chinese Theater.
I don't know. I've been there. Have you been there? You've been there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Who'd you visit when you were there?
I went to.
I remember his. I remember John Wayne's. And I remember Roy Rogers. Yeah, I remember Roy Rogers a lot.
We just hopped out. We were going to the Sharon Tate house. So, yeah, I was passed through.
You did it as an adult.
Yeah.
I did it as a child. So like.
I guess you're muy autentico. I did it as a lurid adult. tour.
So when you saw the John Wayne's footprints, that cement that he put his footprints in was actually mixed with sand from Iwo Jima Beach that he collected while filming the sands of Iwo Jima.
That sounds like total bullshit.
This is apparently fucking, like, a lot of really reasonable resources reported this. That he brought sand from Iwo Jima when they filmed the movie.
Uh-huh.
And had it mixed in with the cement that is now... That's kind of... Really? Come on, you don't believe that?
I don't know.
Maybe, oh, you gotta believe that.
Maybe you're filming Sands of Iwo Jima, and you're like, let's fill up a jar with some sand. And then you get home, and you're like, I don't know what I'm gonna do with this sand. Yeah, and then an opportunity to dump it comes along.
Yeah, like,
along.
Hey, man, come put your footprints. It's like, oh, this would be a great American thing for me to do, right? I could throw the sand from Iwo Jima into the cement and put my paw prints in this fucking sand. And if you look at it, it's like his boot prints and a fist.
Okay.
That's what his is.
So when did he mix in his jar of sand from Normandy Beach?
About the same time that he fucking put his nutsack down in it too.
Berets second time around. Welcome back, John.
Well, no, because like his other big famous World War II movie is The Longest Day, but like there were everybody was in that movie. So John Wayne was like a part in it.
No, his
like
second, his biggest war movie is definitely Green Berets, and then the second one is
Sands of Iwo
Jima. Maybe Sands of Iwo Jima.
No, Sands of Iwo Jima is like his biggest. Come on.
I don't know. Hey,
come on.
Longest Day, you can't say is his biggest True because Grit. Everybody was.
All right, was he
True Grit? Sands of Iwo Jima.
I may get busted for this.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Wasn't he in Bridge over River Kwai?
Yes,
I think so. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think Sands of Iwo Jima, Bridge over River Kwai.
Yeah.
He did a lot of World War II movies. I don't know why
nobody knows Bridge over River Kwai.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't that an insurance company commercial theme? Or an oil company theme?
It was an insurance company. It's been all over the fucking, like, everybody knows that.
Somebody used
but
that
yeah,
in the commercial.
That song is called the Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Yeah.
It's pretty boring when you're playing a bass instrument. Boom.
Boom, 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 boom,
boom.
Boom. Yeah, but you're irresponsible for the rest of everybody else. So.
Oh, fuck them, man. They get to play the...
So, why don't you do a 3-2 beat?
So, anyway.
Whatever.
Where was we?
Glorified Andy Griffith theme.
All right, so he didn't get into the military. So, he didn't actually get into the military because of his back thing and shit. So, instead, what he did is he started doing a whole bunch of USO appearances and shit. He flew all over the world, going and seeing guys who were at war and performing for them, and was often seen speaking to the troops and hanging out with them and just basically a huge supporter. So, in 1947, he made his debut. We did that as a producer. Growing family, three wives. 1951. He started his many appearances on I Love Lucy.
Yeah, because Lucy was...
Anybody remember this?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I watched a couple clips from this. And I've watched a lot of Lucy in my life, and I don't remember seeing those episodes.
Oh, no, she probably do Lucy here pretty soon.
Yeah, and frequently as the butt of the joke.
That
Lucy is...
That woman is fucking amazing.
But
she's incredible.
Yeah, yeah, they have the thing where Ricky gets the movie deal, and they have, I think it's a full season filmed in what's supposed to be a Hollywood hotel room, and John Wayne keeps popping by and all that. Quite a few people. There was a scene with Lucy filmed in the Brown Derby with Charles Boyer. Is in it.
I don't fucking know who Charles Boyer is. Doesn't matter.
Very famous actor.
Nice job. We've been trying to get that fucking moth all night. Good shot. Must be the cowboy shirt.
Charles Boyer was an actor whose famous movie is part of the common parlance now, but was not 5 years ago. Can you name this common term? It is the title of Probably Boyer's most famous movie.
This, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
No, this term is a one-word term. It is the one-word term that is usually used within the context of people bitching about the rape culture thing. A one-word term.
Oh, God, really?
I don't know that this is appropriate, but I'll bite. What the fuck is it? I don't know. I'm not even going to guess.
Gaslight.
Oh.
That's a Charles Boyer movie.
Oh.
His most famous one.
Here's the problem with
that. That is where the term came from. I did know it came from a movie.
Here's the problem with
Charles Boyer.
Yeah, Charles Boyer. And,
I'm going to fucking lose my shit in about half a second.
We're on microphones.
Yeah.
What's your problem?
Here's the problem with gaslighting.
Let this shit up.
Gaslighting? Here's the problem.
Late night recording with John.
Detour, ladies and gentlemen.
The shit is
Jazz
right.
moves on to
if
John.
If you are honestly fucking right, it's not gaslighting. Okay. You're just a dick.
John has other issues he wants to discuss. I think.
No, I don't.
Apparently, that was pretty random. What's up?
Just the whole gaslighting thing. Sorry.
I think John had a bad phone call and needs to
I'm pretty certain.
He needs to get it off his chest.
Anger needs to come out.
And that will happen when we're not on the air.
Getting
back to John Wayne, what's the next thing in the sequence?
He never did the Lone Ranger, did he?
No.
No.
No, why would he do that? No, Lone Ranger was way too feminine for him.
Yeah.
Like, I'd play the Lone Ranger.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Will you be my Tonto?
The gay one.
I just wish I could quit you.
You know,
can we get back to
just... I'm sorry that I set him up like this. I really am. I just don't...
You know, we're talking about John Wayne. We're only at 1951. Keep it moving. Clippity-clop.
Oh, so anyway...
To
continue through that, John Wayne has been considered a racist and a sexist.
Oh,
and it is mainly due to the 1971 article in Playboy.
Well,
that's kind of the biggest reference.
He also had a movie where he spanks a woman.
Having read it, I didn't put any of this stuff down. I just ran from memory. Having read it, it sounded like he was doing the best he could with the words he had for somebody who was born in the early 1900s. But he's also quoted as saying that Rock Hudson's cool. He doesn't care if Rock Hudson was gay. That's a paraphrase of a quote. John is allergic to tonight's podcast.
I really am. I'm sorry.
John is allergic to tonight's podcast. Sorry, folks.
I'm really not paying attention to everything. And
so it, like, and I don't.
I'm gonna be.
I don't know. I can see why, by today's judgment, his statements were considered racist. I can see by why 1971 it could be seen as racist.
You know, quite frankly, I don't see. Because everything that he was portraying in the movie theaters was the same thing that Ronald Reagan.
Oh shit! Just
was
can we? Can we not? Can we? God, I've got tubes one and two loaded, ready to go.
I know.
Can we not?
I know. I'm trying.
Can we not? Just can we just pull back from this stuff that I can't take this late at night and just not do it? Can we just not do it tonight?
No, let's go. Come on. I'm right here.
Jesus.
1952, he got his first cover on Time magazine. First cover.
Giddy up.
Very first cover. let's see. Although being nominated three times before, he finally got an Academy Award for his role as Rooster Cogburn in
True Grit.
1969.
Co-starring Kim Darby.
He also got a second Time magazine cover for this.
Well, that I think was a singular movie because that was a Western that I feel pulled in non-hardcore Western viewers.
That's like when he started playing an old man, though.
He's not really an old man.
Well, no, he was crotchety, solitary old man.
No.
Okay, grizzled is a good word. Yes.
Yeah, he played a character.
Curmudgeonly, perhaps.
It was, yeah.
He quit being a hero. He played a character.
He was a little bit anti-hero, actually.
Yeah. Yes, for much of the movie.
He played a character. Yeah. He actually had to act at that
point. The remake, although cute, does not do the movie justice.
No, the remake's bullshit. Fuck that.
It's cute. It's cute,
but you don't but have it. It's a contemporaneous movie because, like, first of all, it's a Western with arguably a female lead.
Which they really pushed with the modern version.
Which is the biggest problem with it. It doesn't work now.
It doesn't work now because who gives a shit now?
You know what I want to see? I want to see a gritty remake of Cat Ballou.
But see, in True Grit, Kim Darby, who I think is like barely 20 in the movie, coming out and being really the lead in the movie in a Western with John Wayne, the biggest Western presence ever. In American film, and she's pretty much the star.
Yeah.
Was such a huge breakthrough. And her portrayal of actually a fairly realistic woman of those times, i.e., you know, women my grandmother's age were in some sense a lot more independent than women of my mother's age. You know, they were a little tougher. They were like in charge of shit and, you know, that kind of thing because of the times, you know.
That was the times that they were living in.
Right.
Women at home. They ruled.
They ruled the home. And they did a lot of shit on their own.
Yeah.
You know.
And God forbid, if you came back from the factory and you didn't have the right... If you were doing the right shit, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You're going to have gluten, flour-free days. You're going to have all of this shit. Everything you do is going to be... World War II.
I am so off track.
World War II. When
all right.
not following
the women all right. controlled.
I got what you're saying. I got what you're saying.
Sometimes women just, they control shit, and sometimes men just need to shut the fuck up and go along with it.
What does that have to do with True Grit?
Well, because Kim Darby was a tough, in-charge woman.
Well, yes, but she was in charge of her own place. She wasn't in charge of something in place of a man.
No, she was in charge of hiring the marshal, Reuther Cogburn, John Wayne, and telling him what to do, and saying, if you don't do what I'm going to do, I'm not going to pay you, and all that kind of crap. And she's, you know, the movie is basically Kim Darby putting her foot down for 90 minutes, and muscling through it. And it's like, it was a huge, huge, huge thing. That movie in that
it
time.
Was it was
in
a
that
big,
time.
It was a big feminist push, which was interesting. And
but
John
the thing
Wayne,
is
John Wayne came
it's
out
appealing.
As anti-feminist because of that role. They're like, is he acting or is he just being himself? And a lot of people blamed him for being himself when it really, I think he was just acting.
That's when he actually had to act. That was the first time he had to act.
And he does act very well
he
in that
did
movie.
A great
it's
job
his
that
best
movie.
Acting.
It's an absolute.
It's a perfect
it's a
movie.
Record breaker.
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah. The only thing bad. The worst in that movie is dopey Glenn Campbell, who can't act. God knows why the fuck he's in this thing. I don't know. He's just a pretty boy running around. Fucking rhinestone cowboy. Jesus Christ.
So one of the interesting things is that
who's the one wearing the boots, by the way?
What's that?
Who's the one wearing the boots?
Me.
Yeah. And he's wearing the cowboy boots.
Are you rhinestone cowboy?
He and I are both wearing boots. He's wearing nice embroidered boots.
Oh, They're
fancy.
Yeah.
Those are pretty fucking sexy, actually.
You know, the listeners cannot hear the boots. Well, they could probably hear the boots, but they can't see the boots. And so they don't
care. Just have to feel
it. Right, so,
maybe I think the boots should maybe be the picture for the episode.
We could. You can take a picture of the boots. Please post it. So anyway, in 1969, he filmed that movie. In 1964, he had survived lung cancer.
Fuck this whole... This.
John, what's going on?
I don't know. John is like... I think John should maybe be Apollo 13 for this episode, and we're just like lost. He's lost in space. Mission control cannot.
Forever our floater. Yeah. Yeah, we can't keep bringing you back, buddy. Yeah.
Sorry.
Like, the computers are cheap and they're going to break. I was coughing,
okay?
You've been coughing. Anyhow.
Yeah, I was coughing in
1964, so prior to filming True Grit, he survived lung cancer. He lost an entire lung and some ribs. Because that's how they got into you then. They're like, they didn't, like, cut your rib and or spread it or whatever they do now. They just, like, removed shit. And so we did all that with one, some things say like one and a third lung, but like basically one lung.
I think you've either got one or two.
Well, I don't know. Modern technology can cut stuff out. And
I gotta tell you,
that's not modern technology. Back in the day, they put a little Ziploc seal on the bottom of it and cracked it. All
right. Yeah, right.
I would rather have
pre-super glue.
Yeah.
Put him for president. I mean, what? Seriously.
No.
Put him
for president every day
of the week.
No way.
Seriously.
It's a terrible idea.
Damn
right. You are obviously allergic to this episode.
No.
All right, so next. Jesus
Christ. 1976's The Shootist was his final film. June 11th, 1979, he died after a year-long battle with stomach cancer.
Yeah, I remember that. I got out of school. It was like my final year of high school. I graduated, and it's like, boom, John Wayne's dead. I was like, well, this is kind of some suck here.
Yeah. Just, 6 months later, Lennon was dead.
Who gave a shit about him?
You did. You hugged him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Fancy pants wife beater.
In 1980, his family received the Congressional Gold Medal for John Wayne. It was simply inscribed John Wayne - American.
The hell is that?
It was a Congressional Medal of Honor.
A posthumous medal to a guy who acted in movies.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
What is that? That's pretty weak.
Every fucking kid in America at that time wanted to be John Wayne, though. All right, so let's go on.
In the 80s? I don't know. No. No.
1981, John Wayne Birthplace Society purchases the birth home in Winterset, Iowa, and keeps it as a museum and gift shop. And now on to some of the fun shit.
It gets more fun?
Yeah. So the Winchester 3030 that Wayne carried in Stagecoach...
Mm-hmm. Sold at auction for...
Nope. Was modified by Wayne himself.
Holy damn. Shit.
Oh, damn.
So that he could twirl the gun like a pistol. It is what is now considered illegally short.
Mm-hmm.
And that long 3 or 4 finger react or
lever.
Lever action thing. Yeah, the rifleman version thing.
Yeah.
He installed that so that he could spin it on the ring that was the trigger, and
because he built that gun.
He built that gun.
He does that in the famous charging.
I told you, got more fun.
Charging scene where he's doing essentially cowboy jousting in True Grit. He's twirling it.
Yeah.
And then we see it.
He built it specifically for that.
And we see the last instance of seeing that was in Terminator 2 on the motorcycle thing when he's on the fat.
John, will you look up a video and throw that one on the internet so that people know what we're talking about?
When Schwarzenegger's on the fat boy and comes flying off the bridge and down the highway and he's twirling the shotgun and shooting it.
He did that himself.
Yeah, well.
That's an awesome mod. That's cool.
I don't know.
Right?
Saw it down, put on a big thingy. A big lever thing.
So in The Searchers, he said a particular line where he said, "That'll be the day." It is said that this is the inspiration for the Buddy Holly tune of the same name, later popularized by the Beatles.
But yet nobody.
Not as good as a Stagecoach gun, but pretty good, right?
But nobody says The Searchers, the band, is named after Searchers, the movie?
I didn't see any of that, but it's entirely possible. Entirely possible.
Okay.
That'd be a good rock and roll reference, actually.
Yeah. Or yeah. that movie Been Searching.
We went through the Yakima Canut thing with the pass-through face. He owned a converted former Navy minesweeper that was called the Wild Goose. So he bought a boat, and he was going to make it a yacht. But what he bought is a decommissioned minesweeper.
Yeah.
It's a Woodside Navy minesweeper.
Yeah.
And he changed it over and called it the Wild Goose. Uh-huh. And he was noted for playing chess.
Well,
chess, a lot. And he kept a set always set up on this minesweeper.
Yeah, just to be clear, a World War II Navy minesweeper is something of a catch-all term. It does not really refer. It refers to
an expendable boat.
Yeah, it expendable boat. It refers to a boat put in service to sweep mines, rather than a specifically designed vessel. Right. So, in other words, if you have a pickup and you're hauling hay, you're in a hay hauler.
Right.
Right. But it's really just a pickup. Because, and I happen to know this because I've been on, like, a whole bunch of World War II minesweepers, and they were quite aplenty, and they were, like, a lot of them were the ferry boats going out off Long Island.
They're called a reasonable yacht.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, you wouldn't really want, no, they're not a yacht. They're not a yacht. They are a fairly large.
He turned his into a yacht.
Yeah, you could. You could.
Yeah, he totally did.
Yeah, because it's wood, yeah. And you can like nail up some shells, put in some contact paper. There's numbers
of pictures on the internet of him and people and family and friends all on the yacht in the middle of nowhere, and he was notorious for keeping a chessboard set up there because he was quite the chess player.
Yeah, that's a fun
time. So he played with a lot of very famous people.
You want to go on my yacht and play chess?
There's a story that he was playing.
Honestly, you know, if I woke up one morning at your house and I said, let's play chess.
Well, and that would be the most
interesting thing that just happened.
Okay.
He does smoke more than us. I mean, it's reported that he smoked up to 6 packs a day. So he smokes even more than us. 6 packs a day, can you even imagine?
I don't know how you do that.
You never put one out.
Yeah.
Ever. You've got a burning cigarette at all times.
Okay.
Even we don't do that.
That's 120 cigarettes a day.
Yeah.
Wow.
When does he sleep?
I don't know, in between cigarette lightings? So, anyway, no. Oh, shit. Okay, so you come back with the math. So, he kept the chess set on the boat, and there's a story where he was playing Robert Mitchum, a world-renowned writer, if you guys don't know, and was caught cheating. Some stories say he was playing Mitchum's son.
Robert Mitchum was an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a writer as well.
No.
Or maybe there's a different Robert Mitchum name that's a writer. Either way, he's playing Robert Mitchum. It would make some more sense because I was surprised because Robert Mitchum, I thought I knew was a writer. And either way, he was playing Robert Mitchum, maybe Mitchum's son, and they caught him cheating. And they said, hey, man, you're cheating. And supposedly John Wayne said, I was wondering when you were going to say something. Set him up. We'll play again.
Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the guy.
Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
He did Cape Fear.
Yeah.
The original one.
Yeah.
And was in the second one.
Was he?
Yes.
Huh.
You damn Skippy.
So, if you're smoking 6 packs a day, assuming...
Here we go!
Assuming you sleep 8 hours, and if you're smoking 6 packs a day at 20 cigarettes per pack, you have to smoke one every 8 minutes.
So that means you could maybe have a...
Well, that means he's doing his own.
What do you think
he's
a cigarette
doing his
six,
own.
Yeah, you do it in
does
six,
a,
and you
does
take
a cigarette last 4 minutes?
He's rolling his own.
Yeah, it's the 2 minutes in between to roll another one.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
So you have to smoke one every 8 minutes, and then...
Even I don't smoke, and I smoke a lot.
And you'd have to be doing that during meals, too.
And I'm
well,
the one right,
so
to
if he was rolling his own like mine,
coughing.
They are the length of a regular cigarette with no filter on it, and I smoke 2/3 of that.
John Wayne wasn't sitting there rolling his own cigarettes.
I think he might have been.
Oh, yeah. I'm on the yacht playing some chess. Let me whip out the... You know,
the rolling machine?
No,
right?
I don't think so.
He was heavily right wing. There's somebody in a bikini
that's going to roll me a cigarette. I'm down for that. Just gonna say it.
If you have people in bikinis, you don't sit around playing chess.
You damn Skippy! If you can play chess and
while somebody in a bikini is rolling you a cigarette, you do that.
You do that.
What are you doing?
You're on a yacht.
Okay, I'm not going to partake anymore of another episode of Sententious Broadcasting. <It's> going.
That'd be a first.
So it was said that he rejected the role of Dirty Harry because it didn't fit the persona he was trying to portray.
I can buy that.
I buy that.
Yeah.
Because if you watch the McClintock movies, they're kind of a little Dirty Harry-esque.
I did only find that like two places, so that's what I'm saying. It's said. But I think it would have been an interesting Dirty Harry, right?
Believable. It's believable. I'm not... Yeah, I don't know.
The whole Make My Day line would have been very different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, Clint Eastwood did a whole different Western gunslinger thing than John Wayne ever did. I mean, John Wayne was always the perfect, you know, hero after it. Clint Eastwood, he didn't care. I mean, A Few Dollars More. A wonderful film. It's just a brutal, brutal thing. I'm going to fucking kill everybody here.
Never seen it.
Really? Well, Clint Eastwood, in his Western roles, acted a lot more in terms of body language and facial expression than John Wayne did. John Wayne was a much more verbal actor in
his Western roles. Well, a lot of people claim that John Wayne was very much into facial expression because the hard character that he played was set aside when he had the emotional look on his face, that broken look he'd get when you could see the character going through an inner struggle. That's what I read.
I don't think
I don't
that's
know that
true.
I agree with it.
I can't think of a single John Wayne scene in a movie where they go to where the camera goes boom from somebody and then boom to John Wayne, and John Wayne's entire acting in that scene is he gives an expression that communicates, and then we go back to the other person. Whereas Clint Eastwood, that's his entire thing in his Westerns. In his spaghetti Westerns, not when he's like Rowdy Yates and all that kind of stuff. But like in the spaghetti Westerns, half of them are camera goes to Clint Eastwood, he gives a facial expression, no verbiage, and then it's communicated. Wayne does not do that at all.
I would agree. Well, I would agree that it doesn't come through to me, but at the time they said he did it. I don't see it.
I don't think that's true. I don't see it at all.
But that's, you know, he was very stone-faced.
Yeah.
But, either way.
He has a stone face. I don't think he's stone-faced in his movies. Like, he is not a silent actor, and Eastwood is in the spaghetti Westerns, not in Big Valley Rowdy Yates. is that at Big Valley is what Clint Eastwood was in? He was Rowdy Yates. I'm not sure if the series was Big Valley or not. I think it was Big Valley.
I haven't done Clint Eastwood yet.
Okay, well, he was Rowdy Yates, whatever, and he had lines in that and did not do it. He did not do what I'm talking about in that, but he did most certainly in pretty much every spaghetti Western I can think of. Certainly the famous ones.
So, back to John Wayne. Eastwood.
Rawhide.
Rawhide, that's it. Yeah, that's...
Rawhide?
Yeah, Rawhide. Yeah, that's really? What I'm thinking of, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to do Clint Eastwood so I can learn that shit.
Oh, then we're gonna get really fucking nasty.
So part of the reason that John Wayne's marriage has failed so frequently, why he had so many of them, is that he had a number of intramarital affairs throughout his life, including a 20-year romance with Marlene Dietrich.
Not Latina.
Not, but I mean, frankly, even by today's standards, beautiful woman.
Oh yeah. What do you mean, even by today's standards?
Well, a lot of the sex symbols from back in the day don't stand up to today's standards.
No, there are different standards.
But that one...
There are different standards.
Oh, she's stunning.
It's not like they're worse looking back then. And
but apparently she was like crazy. She'd run up to him on set and jump up on him and like leap up, wrap full body legs and arms around him, and just he'd support her because he was a monster of a man at 6'4". Until he got older and started doing things like wearing a wig. Starting in 1948, due to his thinning hair, he started wearing a wig in every scene. He'd not wear one in public, but he'd wear it on set. He had his crow feet worked on. He eventually took to wearing risers in his shoes because, as we all know, you shrink. And he was always 6'4", and the risers at that point in time, near the end of his life, only got him up to 6'2".
Risers back then were, like, common, though.
Yeah.
They were heavily advertised.
Yeah.
Like
there was not for somebody my height, not somebody his.
No, I mean, there was not a single men's magazine back in the 60s, and I'm not talking just Playboy. I'm talking, like, Popular Mechanics, whatever. They all had ads for risers in them.
Well, of course, because I'm 5'9", I'm a tall man. I'm lucky.
So the next thing I got, and pretty much the end of the things, is that there's a rumor that Stalin ordered Wayne's death as a way to undermine the quote-unquote American way. The rumor goes on to say that the FBI intercepted the two KGB assassins, as well as spoiling other attempts on Wayne's life. There were two KGB assassins out to get Wayne. And thank heavens the FBI was there to get him. Right?
When did this info come out?
Relatively recent. I think that was Reddit.
In the 90s?
I think it was Reddit.
No, I mean, because this could have been this could have been released in the Venona document dump of the mid-90s.
It's entirely possible.
Like where it came Reddit. Out that the Soviet Union...
I just looked at the Reddit.
But it came out that there was actual documentary proof provided by the former Soviet Union in the Venona document dump where, yes, the Soviet Union had tried and had effectively infiltrated the Hollywood thing.
They were trying to assassinate head Hollywood figures.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that part.
To change the American way. So you're thinking that it is actually possible.
I think it's quite possible.
That there were assassination attempts by the KGB on John Wayne's life.
I think it's
life.
Quite possible.
Really?
I think it's quite possible. And I would
Holy
give them,
fuck, no
I would,
way.
I would give them more credence if I knew that they were released in that document dump. And if they were, yeah, sure.
Vernonia document
Holy
dump.
Holy shit.
John?
I just walked back from the bathroom and this is what I walk into.
Yeah, right. Well, all right. So there were KGB attempts on John Wayne's life that were thwarted by the FBI. And maybe if it's in the Vernonia dump, you got the computer, that's why you got it out. You want to typey-typey? And we'll keep it like, so
dump.
Yeah.
Venona. I think it's Venona. I think there's no R. I think it's just Venona. Soviet Union, Venona documents, whatever.
But I didn't go that far. Like I said, I just read the Reddit thing. But... Really?
Seriously? Yeah, no, because... So
these are what? Releases of...
Vernonia papers.
Information that was collected by the Russians?
The Russians, former Soviet Union, right, very close to after the fall of the wall, I think. So I think, I'm thinking 98 or something like that, released a whole bunch of papers, colloquially known as the Venona documents, that detailed that, yes, a lot of this effort to infiltrate Hollywood was, in fact, true. And Joe McCarthy was correct.
They were tied into the Lincoln Bank scandals? Go ahead.
All right, Pizzagate.
What you got, John?
Honestly, I'm just... I walked back from the bathroom and I just got nailed with a bunch of shit.
Yeah, but
so
what you got?
I don't know
John's
what
not
I'm looking at.
On
yet.
His game
right.
here.
Yeah,
so there's Frank Oppenheimer. I mean, if you really want to go with Oppenheimer.
No. All right. So we'll let people do their
own. Actually, the Venona documents would be a fantastic podcast.
It might not be a bad idea. I have been looking at the Mandela effect, too, because that's been going heavily on. Anyway.
Really?
Yeah, we'll talk. We'll talk. Anyway, I guess maybe it's wrap-up time. John Wayne. Not a lot of John Wayne in the John Wayne episode, I think. But ultimately, I can watch him. I don't get the allure, and it's because I'm too young. I'm not a product of that time.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is.
Yeah, that's it.
It's not anything against him. As far as him being racist, then again, I think I'm seeing him as not a product of the time. And as far as his contribution to the American way, again, I don't think I'm a product of that time. I don't necessarily get his relevance, and I thought that maybe doing this I would get some of his relevance, and it didn't happen that way. I was researching a historical figure, not something that's today. Go ahead, John.
Okay, and here's where I'm going to differ, because he's 5 days older than I am.
Who, me?
Yeah, you are 5 days older than I am, so we're pretty much the same person. Right, however... My granddaddy told me, boy, you better have a blade in your pocket and some jingle in your pocket. You better have a blade?
Blade at your side and jingle in your pocket is what you always said, yes.
So you're a pirate.
Kinda.
Kinda. Yeah. Well.
Ragnar.
I don't think John Wayne ever did a pirate movie.
That'd be he cool. never did. Well, that'd be awesome.
Pirate. We are interrupting his rap.
Only if he was going to sing
in a constructive way, admittedly. But
aside from that, you know what? Fuck it.
We're not good at this late night shit.
I'll be done.
Just say it, John.
I'll just be done. You know, if you want to just laugh, complete your thought. We're laughing at ourselves currently.
You got to have a knife and some jingle in your pocket. And
yes.
And
this because is... Louis L'Amour and this whole thing about being the right guy, this is the way that a man should act. Be righteous, be good, be genuine, be honest. That's the way that I was raised. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, but that's the way things
happen. So you're saying that's the John Wayne way?
Yeah.
Is it passing the bus?
Okay.
Passing the bus.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. For me, growing up, like, you know.
And you're the one wearing the shirt.
Cool-ass shirt.
And the boots.
Yeah, I mean, for me, John Wayne was a big figure because, you know, I grew up, my early years were in the 60s. So, like, TV for me was Westerns when I was very young. So yep. Westerns were incredibly relevant, and John Wayne
Wagon
was,
Train
and Bonanza and whatever. Yeah, and so like Westerns was kind of the thing, and I never really got the appeal of it because it always looked like a unpleasant way of life compared to, you know, living in New York City. I never understood why it was considered so great, but like you know, what John Wayne did is he really. You know, he rises to prominence like in the 50s and stuff, and that's a whole carrying on the American way. America's very proud of itself then because we've saved the world twice now, and America's very proud of itself, and the American way is the best way, and John Wayne certainly carries that torch. And then the 60s come along, and there's a little bit of self-doubt in America, and John Wayne is the bringing it back to like, no, hey, we're still cool. And we're going to space and all that kind of thing. We got a lot to be proud of. And so John Wayne was still like that anchor that the American way is the thing, you know. And he was that figure. There were other figures, but he was the figure that people, you know, saw all the time.
And
anticlimactic.